All right, we're taking over, everybody. I think we're live. We're Matt and Bob. We're here to pod. You're listening to the
analysis.
Oh, wow, Bob, it's been like a little summer break here. We did the very exciting Barbenheimer craze. Those two movies have now made $2 billion since we chatted about it. Little kind of, you know, you didn't bring in the big guns for Bear, but, you know, some people may have listened to that episode. But it's been a minute. I mean, not a lot going on at the movie theaters. And, you know, the window for streaming has elongated to encourage more theatrical movement. So some movies I saw a few months ago are only now just getting onto the streamers for less than a $20 premium rentals. But I'm glad you finally checked them out.
So I was able to check them out. You always are teasing me out here, but it's not a matter of financial anything. I'm just trying to find some time, man. I'm a busy dude.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing that, like, you know, when we were in high school, see movies constantly, or like our parents would take us all the time. That was such a thing to do. I just don't know how anyone had time to do it. And we've talked about this before, like, how do adults see movies? And it doesn't seem like anyone wants to anymore. And I can kind of relate.
And when you do, it's like an event. It's now like it's something that you, I haven't done that in 3 or 4 months. There's a movie that kind of everyone's going to see, kind of like a Barbenheimer type of a situation. But yeah, it's you just don't like casually go as much.
Well, it's kind of a catch-22 where people don't go as much because there's not as much to see. It's like, you know, a movie like Oppenheimer or Barbie doesn't come around all that often. It's only comic book movies and not everyone is into those. Whereas, you know, your Beyonce, your Taylor Swift Eras Tour, the Blink-182.
Yeah, or Taylor Swift Monday Night Football.
Yeah, yeah. All the Swifties, KC fans.
But anyway.
Crazy how big that is. I'm just not shocked.
What world are we in?
Yeah.
Like, it's, but anyway.
But it's, I think concerts are the new movie, like the event night thing. Like, I know people that go to a concert weekly. Santa Barbara Bowl up here by me, Hollywood Bowl down in L.A. I mean, you got, what, Foo Fighters, and then this band called Odessa. Kenny Loggins is about to play. People go, like, that's their, you know, our movie night was, like, every weekend, you know, it was, like, Men in Black, and then it was, you know, another Will Smith vehicle the next week. It would be, like, Independence
Day. Wild West.
Yeah, great movie. Liar, Liar, when Jim Carrey was coming out with stuff. There were movies that were making well over $20 million, like, 10 movies a week that were doing well, which is insane to think about now, where it's, like, once every 6 months, you got these big events. So anyway, a few movies that may have slipped under the radar just after Barbenheimer, Past Lives, and Across the Universe, which is
Across
the Spider-Verse.
Across the Universe is a Beatles musical.
I went and saw that movie. That's what we're talking about, right?
That's actually pretty good. Yeah,
that's
a good movie.
I've been trying to get you to see Past Lives for a while. I was tempted to consider this for, like, best original screenplay, you know, from a writer-director debut. Saline Strong, who was writing on the show Wheel of Time, before that was a playwright. I mean, coming out of nowhere. You know, you show me a list of, like, the top 50 screenplays as voted by members of the WGA, and I thought that was a really interesting list. Give me your thoughts. I mean, I've been sitting with this for months, and I'm curious to finally chat with you about it.
Yeah, sorry for the wait. You know, normally it's the analysis 2 week delay. There's 2 or 3 weeks, and then I finally see something. But this was a very long delay. It's been on the to-do list for a long time. I actually think, unintended and somewhat organically, these movies do go well together as a double feature to talk about, because they kind of both deal with, you know, that our life is full of choices and we constantly entertain, like, what ifs, you know. It's our life, we think about what, or both of these movies think about what ifs a lot in different versions of ourselves, shall we say. So I really liked this movie, and I think we chatted about this just offline, but especially the final act of it.
Yeah.
At first, I'm kind of it's a slower burn. It's a little patience required to get into it first, but very quickly I started to feel like this was reminding me of a similar movie that I really liked called Like Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like Anton Yeklin and Felicity Jones? And it's that story was about a couple that met in college. One was a foreign exchange student, and they have a very beautiful beginning of a love story, but then she has to go back and she can't get a work visa. And it's just kind of exploring how distance and how time and how sometimes we grow apart from each other with those things. And so I thought that movie was, I really liked that movie.
No, totally. It was kind of like love finds a way sort of a thing, right?
Or doesn't.
Yeah.
Honestly, like it was kind of like as you're going to change in time and distance. You're inevitably going to change, and if you're not together or around somebody, like you change as a person. And so, you know, it explored kind of distance relationships, and this does in kind of a similar way, but also, you know, very focused on kind of the present life that we're in versus a representation of the past life that we chose to leave. So I thought that really came together in the final act, and I actually really enjoyed, my favorite character in this movie was Arthur, and I loved the scenes.
John Magaro, yeah.
Yeah, when he was talking about, you know, basically what we were kind of expecting, this kind of more romantic type of a movie where he's like, I would be the villain in that story. Mm-hmm. If this was a movie of our life, I would be the person that the audience was rooting for you to leave. And you're kind of having some of those feelings as you're going through, because you know the other relationship so much more intimately. But then I think it takes a very realistic look at that. And, you know, she chooses him, and I thought that there was a lot of just interesting, intimate dialogue there in Act 3.
Yeah, it was surprisingly like an edge of your seat thriller. I almost had to get up and go get a beer, Taylor Brennan style.
Taylor Brennan, man. did you stand and applaud at the end?
Yes. No, it's a modern.
Hugh Jackman shows up.
It's a modern romance of realism. Like at no point did you get the sense that a studio suit came in and be like, these two have to end up together, you got to change this?
Yeah.
Like, it was, everything was possible, but there was no right answer. There's no Hollywood ending. It's just like, man, it's, what are you supposed to do? Because, like, two things can be true. So just to back up real quick, I mean, so past lives, we got the story of Nora Haesung, two deeply connected childhood friends. They're rest apart, you know, after Nora's family emigrates to South Korea. And then 2 decades later, so there's like 3 acts to the movie. I think it skips 12 years twice.
But it starts with that opening shot of two people having a conversation. They're trying to figure out how these three people know each other. There's a white guy and then two Koreans.
I love that framing device, right? Do you ever do that? Mm-hmm. You're at a bar and just like, you know, you're kind of bored and you're like, like, you start playing games, like, let's guess their relationship, or you're just, like, just the people watching. And then, so we slowly zoom in on these three people we don't know anything about. We only hear, like, you know, these onlookers kind of almost not really eavesdropping. They can't hear them, but just, like, you know, it'd be funny to try to guess what these people are, where they're from, or who's dating who.
He's a tour guide? It's 4 a.m. It's a bar. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, maybe they're related, and he's a boyfriend, or
just reminds me of stuff we, you know, we used to do dollar beers in Chicago and be like, how is that guy with her, or vice versa? Like those dynamics where it's
his name was Greg Ott.
Yeah. But it's funny. It's this, the dynamics of how people crash into each other. And, you know, you see people walking down the street, super short guy, massively tall woman. You're like, is this a for hire, or what's their backstory? And for all we know, they're like lifelong friends. And it's just the assumptions people make. That's kind of what we lead into the story. And then boom, we're back 25 years. And we're like, all right, here we go. Let's get through the, but then, you know, right away, I was like, oh, this isn't a chore at all. I'm really invested immediately. But then to your point, I think when we get into like Onion and like that underlying, you know, our past lives and our destiny, getting into that stuff, is it used to pick up dudes at a writer's retreat, or is there any truth to, like, have we met in past lives, or is this the beginning of an onion where in the future, you know, we'll be, you know, servant and emperor in the distant future, and this is our little spark, this moment. That's where it took off, where you kind of get those deeper themes. And I just loved the, there was no hand-holding. It was just totally honest, and it was kind of thrilling. Like, once we get back to that opening shot, and then it goes beyond, you're like, okay, here we are. Now we're in open water, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how people feel. I mean, they're trying to express their emotions really honestly, but it's a tricky situation. And like you said, Arthur, he's like, what, how the fuck am I supposed to feel about this? But also he's like, you know what, man, it was the right thing to come here. And just that the dynamic is fascinating. Like, if some dude shows up from Brecken's past, are you going out to dinner with them while they catch up? Are you?
Probably not. No, I would not be nearly as chill, I would say, as Arthur was. But I think that's past lives is working on a couple of different levels, because you've got the literal example that they're talking about with the Inyun. But then you also have the fact that, and I think that's why Arthur is happy that he's met Heisung, is because there's that great scene where she's in the bathroom and she's kind of going to bed for the night. And she says, I feel more Korean than I've ever felt when I'm with him, but I also feel less Korean. And I think that's him, you know, Heisung is her reconnecting in a way. It's her last connection to her Korean life. And this is really the first time that Arthur's been able to see that. And so I think he's grateful, because he's like, oh, she's, I can see her most, like, authentic Korean self when she's with you. And I also think, you know, there's that moment where he talks about how she was a crybaby all the time. And she never cries anymore in the U.S. She says people don't care. And so the very end of the movie, she collapses into Arthur's arms and she's crying. Yeah. And she's saying goodbye to her childhood, basically, in a way, because that's the last connection she has to it. And Arthur sees, like, her full person now.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. Like, past lives is working on a few different levels.
There's so many things happening at once. Like, there on one level, there's, like, nostalgia. Like, oh, I miss my childhood, my friend. I miss the fact that I'm Korean instead of a New Yorker. But also, it's like, I'm a fish out of water. Like, I'm speaking Korean with this man, but he's not where I want to be. I my life is here, writing plays and, you know, trying to get a Pulitzer and a Tony and all this. So, like, you can look back and miss something, but realize you're better off where you are. And, like, I think all of us struggle with that all the time, where it's like, man, how great would it be to be in Detroit and, like, all the new stuff that's going on there now, like all the new restaurants and the Lions are finally good and we're across the country. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to live there. You know, it's like, I don't want to be stuck back there, just having spent my entire life in the same city I grew up in. Like, so two things can be true. You can be sad about one thing, but then also kind of happy, or get a sense of closure in the fact that you are where you're meant to be, even if it's like, and that's what Arthur's dealing with, where he's like, you know, every day you make my world so much bigger, and I don't think I do that for you.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, is she madly in, is this like this a true romance that is like unrequited, and, you know, the greatest heartbreak in the history of storytelling, like two great loves not finding each other? Well, not necessarily. It's like, what's she gonna do, like run away with him? That's not really possible. You know, it's like The Graduate. The second the guy runs away with the girl, he's like, well, fuck, what do I do now? Like, we're just on this bus. So
yeah, exactly. And I think that's, and that's maybe another reason why Arthur is happy to have met Heisung at the bar, is because now she's not going to spend a lot of time in her head fantasizing about what the life and soul would be. Like, she has closure that, like, oh no, I actually made this choice. I made the choice to live the life in America, and by choosing Arthur, I continue to make that choice. And this was the life that I was meant to have, because it's the choice that I made. And she can have closure now, knowing that, like, oh, this isn't actually something that I'm really longing or have feel like I've missed out on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she knows that she's not supposed to be with him, you know? And that's kind of her saying goodbye to her childhood and that when that taxi pulls up.
Well, yeah, and what's interesting about that final shot was, like, we pan to the left, you know, she's going back into her past, spending some time there, and then pans right back right as she walks to her present. And then I think she's put that in the past. She's put it in a car, sent it off, and now they can kind of be their truth selves to each other. To each other, I think, but at the same time, yeah. I think she's...
No, I'm right with you. The movie's less about a romance, and it's more about the choices that we make in our life and the life that we're leading.
I think she still has, like, regret, where it's, like, this impossible decision where it's, like, man, I feel in love with this person, and there's no way... It's just, like, a little tease for a minute, and I kind of have to put it in a box and put it away. I don't know if it's, like, full closure. I think it's more complicated than that, where... I think she could see herself with Haesung at the same time as that being impossible. So I think there's, like, a tricky, and she's just like,
yeah,
what you said about her crybaby and her kind of releasing her emotions. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, she sinks, and it's an emotional weighty. You're like, it's fun to kind of dissect and talk about, but I just think it's like, she's in the center of two boulders kind of crushing up against her. It's just it's kind of overwhelming, I think, emotionally, because it is like this great romantic fantasy that Arthur is like, you know, what the fuck am I supposed to do? I'm sitting here in my own farts playing video games. Like,
he couldn't look more pathetic when she walks into the just like glow, just the sad glow of what could be porn, but no, it's sadder. It's like Xbox, Mario Party. Yeah.
And he's just like, playing Mario Party alone.
Do you have a good time? Yeah. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, they really made him look pathetic there.
Yeah, I think I rediscovered the love of my life. How was your day? Well, you know, I unlocked this AK-47 online or whatever.
I fed 48 eggs.
Yeah. That was way like more 40 than 48 eggs. Yeah, he was playing the egg. God, if we were gonna pan around.
True. You're a rock star. You had a good time?
Do you want to come out for some pasta? Hold on a second. I got to see this egg's asshole. I'm almost to the end.
And we've just improved the script.
Yeah. Let's get some rewrites going. Having said that, though, I'm not locking in anything. I don't think you are. But any thoughts Oscar-wise?
Foreign language lock. I don't need to lock it in, but... I would be really surprised if it didn't win Best Foreign Language.
I don't think that this is eligible. It's an A24 production. It's written by, obviously a Korean-American, but I think it's an American production.
It must be American production. Okay. It's very, it feels kind of like American movie. It's not Best Foreign Language film. It's Best Foreign Film. So.
Yeah, I think that category has changed. Where is it Foreign Language Film? I mean, I don't, because...
No, I think it's just foreign. It's like a film produced and made in another country.
Yeah, so the country has to sponsor that film, right? Mm-hmm. So I think Korea obviously sponsored Parasite, and that went on to win Best Picture and Best Foreign Film. I actually don't know where this qualifies, but I do like the idea of the screenplay getting in there. Kind of like Worst Person in the World a little while ago.
Yeah. That movie was awesome.
Yeah, great script. I think this is just such a smart script, and it's, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. It's so tight. There's not a ton of wasted moments. It's just kind of living with these people, and we kind of, you know, we move along. I love the thing where, like, the guy's back with his buddies after kind of the Zoom relationship is over, and he's like, tonight we drink till we die.
Yeah.
Which is so, you go out with Koreans on Korean barbecue night, it's like they're going fucking crazy, man. I can't keep up ever. But no, I think this is probably one of the best movies I've seen this year, in terms of, like, wow, that's, I mean, there's still a lot to come, obviously. You know, stuff was delayed, Dune 2 was pushed, we didn't know what would be coming out, basically. Obviously we got Oppenheimer. Now, you really like...
And then you've got the Killers of the Flower Moon coming later this month, and then, you know, you're always going to have the Oscars, the kind of the Oscar darlings come out in around November, December, January.
Well, what's interesting, so last year, right, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, we saw in February, March, or, I mean, April, whenever it was, Do you think we've already seen the Best Picture winner? So are you like Oppenheimer? Would you rather have the movies that have already come out, like Air, Oppenheimer, this, or would you rather take The Field?
That's a great question. I'm going to take The Field. I just don't know if there's any runaway. But also Everything Everywhere All at Once was one of the most successful Oscar films of all time.
Yeah.
So, I don't think there's anything that's going to do that. I think it's going to be a little more fragmented this year, but
there's some good stuff coming out, man. There's David Fincher's The Killer with
isn't that Fassbender?
With Fassbender. That looks
and
awesome.
And then they've got obviously Killers of the Flower Moon, Leonard and Scorsese with De Niro. That's gonna get a lot of attention. We'll see. I'm gonna take The Field, even though I just Oppenheimer, I think, is gonna be very successful. But anyway, who knows?
Oppenheimer is gonna be a strong player. I mean, of everything that's come out, and no offense, but I think Air is irrelevant at this point. Even though it was, we both enjoyed that one, obviously. I think just because the back. Because the strikes are the writer strike's over, the SAG may soon come to an end. I think we'll still get the press tours, which will keep these movies on schedule. But just the back of the year is always so loaded, or backloaded, like Coda out of nowhere. There's always going to be something. I think Oppenheimer will be hard to dethrone, but I'm not willing to bet that it won't. Funny connection between this and Across the Spider-Verse, though, is that Greta Lee, who played Nora, she's actually a voice in Spider-Man.
There you go.
She does the AI model. You like how I did that?
Oh, really?
So I don't know how you felt about the first one. Obviously, me and you are exhausted by anything to do with multiverse or MCU or comic book movies in general. But
yeah.
I think these movies have sort of separated themselves by being a way to successfully do what we're just so tired of, and the most recent whatever stage we're in Marvel MCU wise, just can't get the shit right. I think what the Flash movie was all about, multiverse, as well.
The Flash was DC, but I mean that had a multiverse thing. He had Keaton
but hanging out. Saw this in theaters and was kind of blown away by the dazzling spectacle, the different worlds and all the usage of all the different comic book styles, which has been lacking in the comic book movies, where I watched the cartoons, I didn't read any of the comics, but the 60s era, that the different animation styles, which and everything in the movies just looks like it's filmed in Atlanta, which it is, and it doesn't really look interesting at all, whereas these movies do. And I thought they turned this up to 11. The first one was really cool, that rotoscoping-esque sort of different, they invented a new style of animation, and this just completely upped the ante. I really enjoyed it, and I don't usually, pound the table for comic book movies, as you know.
Yeah, it is really surprising that you are this jacked up about a comic book movie. You'd think Tom Cruise was one of the voices. Was he?
Not that I know of.
Although, all right,
that would make a lot of sense. I think he could have pulled off the Oscar Isaac role.
Miguel. Yes. Yeah. But I had a little mixed feelings about it because I think I felt very tired after one. Maybe that's just me being an old man. But I was like, God, this movie is relentless. I'm exhausted watching this movie. But at the same time, the animation is why you're there, right? And so it was less about how much they were throwing at you, and it was just it was a lot of jokes on top of really interesting animation, but the plot, you're just kind of flipping all around, and it's oh, this Holes guy is going to actually be a legitimate character. This isn't just a throwaway villain that he captures in the beginning of the movie. But
villain of the week.
Yeah, it was almost like a funny villain that he catches early or something. But I was like, oh, no, this is really going to be a important part of our plot here today. But I felt like in any multiverse, you know, there was elements of it that were kind of eye rolling, kind of the, oh, let's do this again. Let me recap. Like, it's like, why do we have to keep recapping what happened in the last movie? People that are here to see this movie, if you didn't see the first one and you got pissed off and you were confused, go fuck yourself. Go watch the first movie. Then you went to a sequel. Like, I'm tired of the, like, let's do this thing again.
Right.
And then there was, like,
which they comment on.
Yeah, but then it becomes, like, a self-referencing joke. And yeah. I don't know, a lot of these comic book movies, it's, like, a lot of self-referencing jokes. And then I think also they're kind of, like, for as little as the family element came in later in the movie, I was, like, we spent a lot of time with it up top instead of, like, mm-hmm. getting, like, Spider-Verse stuff. But then once you're in the Spider-Verse, it's so cool how every verse they go to has a different artistic style, yeah. animation style, I guess. I think there's like a lot of character choices that are made in the actual like character design of the different villains and the different Spider-Mans. It's just like really, you just tell like so much thought and detail went into it. And honestly, like Spider-Man might just be better drawn. Like it just like a lot of, I always thought like yeah. the Tobey Maguire stuff was like, it was so CGI, you know? And I was like, I enjoyed it at the time, but it's like, oh, maybe this is just better as a comic or like a cartoon, you know?
No, yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, as far as the characters go, Batman or Spider-Man is kind of 1A, 1B in terms, and then Ninja Turtles for me growing up, but it's kind of stops there. I guess maybe the X-Men, but as far as standalone guys, it's, you know, Batman's probably the coolest, but Spider-Man is right there.
But Batman works better in person, like, or yeah. you know, with actual, you know, film footage. Like, I think Spider-Man, just the actual story is, like, play better in
absolutely. I mean, okay, I think we enjoyed those Tobey Maguire movies, at least maybe the first two, but because they were kind of big events. They were kind of new. That was like pre-Iron Man. I mean, this was a big deal. And then, you know, they had like the tie-in video games, which was like GTA, but with Spider-Man, was super fun. And now it's just so tired that there's been 50 that it's like not original whatsoever.
Like
No Way Home? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can see Tom Holland is a big fan favorite and it's returned. Like, he's an actual teenager, you know, in the... I get that, but this is just so much more impressive. I'm not going to get all the Easter eggs and like all the thousand different Spider-Man.
Maybe that's why we're not like, it's a little more frantic. I'm like, can we slow this down a little bit? But you know, it's like there's so many references that they're throwing in for the major fans. That's like, oh, okay.
But I actually, whereas I hate that in the Marvel movies, because that's their entire business model is like, no one's excited about the actual movie they're watching. They only care about like what they're going to tease coming up mm-hmm. next. So, yeah. But whereas this, I was down to just be along for the ride. And, like, especially the, oh my God, the Gwen Stacy world where it's like the watercolors that were constantly dripping and moving.
Cool.
Like, I was like a mood ring wall, like wallpaper. And then they weren't afraid to have like, almost like a cinematography, but like really cool shots, although really cool drawings, where in a comic book you don't always need to see the fully formed character all perfect. It was like just like shards of a guy, because like the dad was kind of, I just found it so interesting. It's like such a better and deeper way to tell a story. That Gwen Stacy stuff with the dad, I really, you know,
yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I was kind of more like, as much as I did like some of the moments, some of the like quieter moments with the characters. And I'm always for that. We just came off of the past lives. Like I can have quiet moments sometimes, even in an animated movie like this. But I just think some of the ways that they were having the fight sequences, or just the way that they would like land and pose, I was just like, how is that? And like, how did someone think and draw that fight choreography?
Because
it kind of almost is, it looks cool, like John Wick, like the detail in what's happening in that aerial fight. But then, you know, he'll sit and he'll land and it'll look like a real image, it'll look like a real person. I was constantly having those moments. I was like, good lord, someone actually drew that or thought of that.
I was also like, how are there more ideas to be had here? Like, how is there different ways to tell this story still, or to animate, or to come up with moves? Like, how is there? There's still stuff that's out there that has been done.
Did you have a favorite action sequence you said that the Gwen Stacy verse was your favorite, which is one of my favorites too. But did you have a particular fight sequence that you liked?
Those big tentpole fight sequences, they're almost like, they're so weighty. So when he's escaping the, you know, whatever the Society of Spider-Man, he gets to the top and he dives down. Yep. Like, all that stuff looked really cool. Although I think my favorite was probably where Spot is bouncing in and out of the different Spider-Verses. That was
really cool.
And it's like, you're all of a sudden you're in like the 1960s version where it's like, hey, who's that guy up there? Whoa.
Yeah.
He's like trying to run
after
him.
That was good.
I love the throwback stuff where it doesn't even matter if you get it. You just know it's like old Spider-Man. It's kind of funny and hokey. Mm-hmm. I like the stuff where it doesn't take itself too seriously without it being so inside baseball that you have to have read the comics to get that, like, for example, like Porky Pig, that like John Mulaney from the first one. It's like, I don't care if this is a real comic or not, or like if this is an actual thing that came out. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
And so perfectly played for laughs that I don't need to get the reference. So I love that stuff the most.
Yeah, I mean, I really, one of the ones that is still in my mind right now is the Renaissance Falcon. That, like, it was like the old Renaissance type, like, line drawing. That was pretty rad.
Yeah.
It went on a little long, but I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I was just like, there's so many different animation styles, but.
Yeah, and then five different animated characters, like all in animated in different styles. It's like a mashup of five different eras of comic books all fighting in one scene.
Yeah, I wonder if they, like, how they did that, where they were able to, I mean, obviously on a computer somewhere, but yeah, that was cool how you had different, you had overlapping art stylings in the same image.
Yeah, which is insane. Just so impressive and like a total thrill ride. That was a lot of fun and visually stunning. I mean, I don't know.
You got another one coming, you know. Like any great movie, there's going to be seven of them.
Yeah, right. Well, if they end at this trilogy, I think that's like a mic drop. Like, you guys nailed this. Lord and Miller. I mean, just really awesome animation. Just super impressive. But yeah, I have this winning best animated movie. Not going out on a limb or anything.
It's your lock in. You're locked in, baby.
I don't even know what comes at the king on this. I mean, I watched Elemental recently. That was okay. Better than I thought it was going to be. Actually, the Pixar movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
But I want to chat about that list you sent me soon, because like, it's kind of interesting how many Pixar movies are on there, kind of in reverse order as I would put them. But
yeah,
talk about that later. All right, cool, man. We can wrap it there. But as far as like, give it a stream, right? I mean,
Two
great options. I don't know if you've heard of this one, by the way. No One Will Save You on Hulu.
That's the one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, or is that something else?
No, this is brand new. It's the main actor is Caitlin Dever. She was in Booksmart.
Okay, yeah.
So this is straight to Hulu. It's an hour and a half. It's like a thriller. It's a home invasion thriller with a extraterrestrial invasion of the body snatchers sort of angle. It's marketed as a mystery thriller horror. I wouldn't describe it as horror, but it's like there's so many. It's a jumble of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. A little bit of The Shining is in there.
Ooh.
You got Invasion of the Body Snatchers. There's just like a little bit of Nope. Just like there's so much sort of like rolled up into in a movie that's pretty cool.
Okay. That's a great sell. That was a little elevator. You just got in the elevator there.
Oh, yeah. You've just been in the elevator with Matt Hayes. 82% Rotten Tomatoes for that one. Spider-Verse came in at, 96?
Hey.
And then Past Lives, 98. 98% Rotten. Oh, so nice. We're, you know, 80% and above is usually you know, and this thing is not an exact science, obviously, but some strong recommends for Give It a Stream.
Give It a Stream. Real quick, Give It a Stream from me. I've been catching up on the Wes Anderson Roald Dahl shorts on Netflix.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so Roald Dahl, are you familiar with any of this?
No, I just watched...
Do your research.
I watched the Wes Anderson short that came out at Cannes that was amazing. I forgot to mention
The Henry Sugar?
This. Yeah, did you see that?
Yeah, so there's three other ones.
No way.
And okay. So the Henry Sugar one is one of them that I've seen. And then
there's
multiple Roald Dahl shorts that it's kind of a very similar cast. It's like Ralph Fiennes and Ben Kingsley are in a lot of them, and they kind of use a few different people. But Benedict Cumberbatch is in a couple, but yeah, one of them's called the something Extraordinary Tale of Henry Sugar or something like that. There's The Rat Catcher, there's Poison, and there's The Swan. So there's
oh, wow.
Four of them. Yeah. So yeah, the nice, I you know, was watching on a plane. I had a plane ride from Chicago. So that's it's a nice little download.
I was dying watching the Henry Sugar one.
Yeah, it was cool.
The Dev Patel, where he's like, he said, just the asides to the camera were killing me.
Yeah,
I didn't know there. Really, I had no idea that that whole Henry Sugar thing was a Roald Dahl story at all.
Yeah, but, yeah. So there's multiple of them. It's really cool, and I think Wes Anderson and Roald Dahl are a great little marriage coming out of Fantastic Mr. Fox. And I wish he'd do some more of the old school ones. But there is I thought it was pretty rad.
You mean like closer to like Rushmore, like that sort of style? I mean,
no, I just think like Roald Dahl has done Matilda, and he has like several famous books. But
I thought you were talking about Wes Anderson.
Yeah, well, Wes Anderson is. I think Wes Anderson is a great marriage to Roald Dahl material.
Totally,
I think that the styles work really well together.
Yeah. And obviously he realized that. Cool, man. Yeah, I got three shorts to watch now. That's
there
amazing.
You go.
Yeah, Henry Sugar. Huge recommend for streaming that one. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a little 25 minutes in and out.
So you were more Henry Sugar than Asteroid City?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because there's something similar about them, right? The presentational theatrical element. You know,
the theatrical element, the sets are very similar. And obviously there's a lot of the colors are, you know, kind of the same.
Yeah, awesome.
That's with every Wes Anderson movie, though. But anyway.
Well, cool, man. Good to chat with you. I gotta get my lights on it.
It was great to chat with you. Pay your light bill. And while you do that, I want to thank the audience for listening. They shouldn't forget to smash that subscribe button. And also, you know, leave us a review if you want. Make sure to treat each other with respect, and we will
see you down the road.
Bye.
Cross lives.
Here we go.